Welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens.
Hey, this is me, Gary Michaels. I'm finally here.
Gary's finally here. Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, mine was fantastic.
You? Okay. Yeah, mine was good. I made it into the studio. Josh and I were the only ones that were around the building at the time.
Right. But
it was good.
Yeah, I just hung out low-key at the house.
Low-key, nice. That's basically, my daughter was home, and I said, all right, what do you want to do? You're in town for 2 weeks. We've got all this stuff we can do. And she's like, I don't want to do anything. She's like, at my school, we move nonstop. No. You know, she has to be up every morning at 5:30, and she's just like, I literally just want to stay home, and that's what we did, mostly.
Man.
So it was cool.
I understand.
Very special guest today, Tim Mauser. Tim, how are you?
I'm good, fellas.
Welcome.
Tim, you're kind of, I feel like we're bringing out the big dog today because, I mean, when I was, new to hockey and when the Utah Grizzlies were first coming to town, you were the guy. You're the guy that, you're kind of the binding that put the whole book together.
Well, it's kind of one of those things, you know, somebody's got to be the glue and, you know, being a little sticky here and there and, it's one of those things that Utah had hockey and had hockey for a long time, and you know it had left and was kind of left for dead by Larry Miller and the Jazz organization there when the Delta Center, you know, got up and running in the IHL, and you know it's the old how do you make a small fortune in sports? You start, or a large fortune in sports, you start with a small one, and that's where you end up at with hockey. Unfortunately, it's not the financial windfall that I think everybody would like to think it is.
Right. And we were talking right before we went on air. We're a half hour late from where we were supposed to be because we got bumped out of the studio by Scott Mitchell and the football podcast or whatever they're doing. And like you said, hockey ranks just below church basketball when it comes to Utah.
Well, you know, it was a great opportunity, you know, with the build up for the Olympics. And I think once the Olympics came and went, the interest, I won't say peaked at that point, but it certainly, that was, you know, at least in my mind, was the highlight of it.
Yeah, I can see that. So, Tim, before we get into all that, because I have questions, and I imagine you're going to be pretty candid. You've always had a way of just saying what you believed, and I have a couple questions for you when we get into it. But first, I really want to get to know what led up to you coming to Utah? I know you were a pro before that. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, growing up playing hockey and where you played?
Well, I'm Peoria, Illinois is my hometown, the cultural mecca of Illinois. You know, there's me and Richard Pryor, the two famous people to come out of there, along with Pabst Blue Ribbon, I think, the three things Peoria was known for.
Nice.
I had some neighbors that played and started playing on the outdoor rinks and went to Michigan State hockey camp as a boy and met a coach there who took me to the State University of New York at Geneseo and, you know, went there on a scholarship and played hockey and bounced around the minors after that a little bit. You know, being, you know, the whole game has switched. It used to be as a 5'8 to 6 foot goalie, you were respected, you were good size, it wasn't an issue. Now, if you're not 6'3 to 6'5, the goalie's the biggest guy in the team now.
Yeah.
The forwards are 5'5 because you can't hook anybody, you can't hit anybody, you can't beat anybody up. So the little shifty fast guy is now taken over where the goalies are 6'5. They go down and get hit by it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really changed the game. So I was fortunate to play in a time that, you didn't have to be big. You had to be quick. You know, you had to be a much better, I won't say athlete, because that may not be true, but the equipment, Jay, and you can certainly attest to this, the equipment sucked back in the day. You had deer hair pads that were leather that weighed 50 pounds by the time you were done. And, you know, you had felt on your arms. There wasn't any plastics. You had to catch everything. You had to be a better than average, you know, goalie with your glove, or you came home bruised, battered, and cut.
Oh, yeah, really bruised up. And you're right, those pads. And I still leave mine upside down, even though I don't need to. But at the end of every game, you took your pads and you set them upside down so that the deer hair went back to the top of the pad, and we waited for them to dry out.
Deer hair is hollow, is why they ended up using that back in the day. And, you know, I don't know if there were Canadians hitting deers with their cars, and they had a bunch of them laying around on the road. They're shaving these poor deers and stuffing goalie pads with their hair. I'm not sure what the deal with that was, but that's what they ended up with. So, no, I went to college, played 4 years, had a good career, held a few records here and there at the time, and got out and, bounced. There was a lot of, crappy minor league teams at that point. The Atlantic Cocktail League was around. The North American League was around. So if you had gas in your car and desire, you could kind of be a professional hockey player if you wanted to. You were making $300 a week. Somebody was driving the van to the game. I ended up playing in the Continental Hockey League for the then Decatur Storm. And, it was who's driving the van and you're, smoking cigarettes in the locker room between periods.
Oh, yeah.
But, you were getting paid. And,
living the life, yeah.
Not much. Yeah, you were not much. And, people were cheering for you and stuff like that. So, it didn't suck. It was all right. I had a college degree, so at some point, I knew there was something that was going to happen, after that.
How many years did you play pro?
I played about 2.5 on and off. I ended up going to work and ended up, sitting on the bench in New Haven a couple nights and, played a couple games in Peoria for the IHL team, then spent a couple, seasons between, and pro may be an adverse term in this. You were getting paid. Were you a pro? Yeah, I guess in the scope of things, you were a pro. But yet, the IHL back in the day was an amateur league. That's how Mike Ruzzioni was able to play for the Olympics in 80, because they didn't classify the IHL when he was playing in Toledo for the then Gold Diggers as a professional league.
Wow.
So when amateurs, weren't allowed to play in the Olympics, they classified those guys as amateurs, because they weren't either the financial equivalent or they weren't on under NHL contracts or what it was. But, it was a good time. I got a couple hundred stitches from it. And, I'm not sure, if I'm ready to send my brain for the CTE deal or not. But, wearing a fiberglass mask and, it was the, hey, how many fingers? And the answer was always two.
Right, right.
You work that out with the team doctor ahead of plans. I'm going to ask you how many fingers did you get hit in the head, and the answer is always two, and, just stay in there.
Yeah, I'm surprised they even asked, to tell you the truth, because...
There were games that
I played that I know for a fact that I was concussed during the games, and nobody bothered to check or worry about it,
right.
And then...
Oh, no.
The next morning you wake up and people are telling you, oh, yeah, you remember you played yesterday? I'm like, no, I have no idea. I have no idea how I got – one of the first times was in Colorado, and I was like, I don't even remember coming to Colorado. I lost – you lose a couple days that way.
Wow.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm still playing. As a matter of fact, I have a game tonight at 10:40 in the 40 and over league. I got new gear. I got new Batram goalie gear that is retro, so it's light. I look like I belong. I'm a hell of a lot better in a slideshow than I am a movie.
So you got the old retro pads. You're in brown leather looking pads in Batram.
Yep.
Okay,
that's great.
Yep.
Our goalie.
No, Scott does a great job, and they're light and they're big. I kind of hide behind them, and if it hits me, great. If it doesn't, the beer is still cold afterwards. So I use it as a shield. I can't really tell my wife that, hey, at 10:30 at night, I'm going out and drinking beer and having chicken wings with the guys. But as hockey is a shield, I can go out and I got a hockey game, and she fully expects that I'm having a beer and staying afterwards. So it's a win-win for me.
Yeah, and then my wife gives me credit for working out, too. She's like, well, you worked out today. That was pretty good. I'm like, oh, I guess. I mean, if that's what we're going to call it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Men's league, yeah.
Hey, our goalie on our team, he's 21, and he has those same pads.
Those retros?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He just got them. Nice. He loves them. He looks great.
Yeah, I came in wearing the brown stuff, and I'm probably going out wearing the brown stuff. And people say, what are you still playing for? Well, at some point, I won't be able to. I'm going to do it till I can't. You see the stuff about the 80-year-old, 70-year-old guys, and say I'm 61, and can still get the job done on most nights. So they went past five guys. How can it be my fault at the goal?
Man, that's a question I ask a lot. Like, hey, can't we just all accept blame for that and not yell at me, and we'll just move on and be happy? I'm just
no question.
Just be glad we're here. Well, that's cool.
Exactly.
So you played your pro career, and at some point you got into coaching?
Yeah, I was I played in some IHL alumni deals. I ended up moving to Toledo. My wife is from Adrian, Michigan, which is just over the border in in Michigan from Toledo, Ohio, and I was in the hotel business, and I was working for a Sheraton hotel in Toledo, and the East Coast League had just blossomed. And I had played, one of the games I played for Peoria was in Toledo against Toledo, so I knew some of those guys. And Chris McSorley, Marty's older brother, was the coach, and he and I had become friends, and they had just started the team there, and they didn't have anybody run it. A guy named Barry Soskin, who now is one of the principal owners in the Federal League, brought the team there. And you could buy a hockey team for $50,000.
Wow.
Was the franchise fee, and this would have been 1991, I think, in Toledo. The franchise fee was $50,000. You know, it was about $7,200 a week in payroll between, you played, 18-6-2 and had one extra guy sitting on the bench. And, it was old time, I went to a hockey game or I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out.
In the old
sports arena. And, I was a sales and marketing guy who knew hockey. And that's really, similar to what happened with me in Utah. And, I used to say there's a lot of people that don't know they're hockey fans yet. You just have to get them to the game. And I'm sure that's still the case. It's not the, the first thing on everybody's mind is, hey, let's go to the game tonight. Somebody's got to drag you there for some, reason, for whatever that might be.
Yeah. That's how it starts. I was just having this conversation. I went to the Grizzlies game on Sunday, and I was sitting with people that it was their first time, and they were loving it. And I just said that, you come, and then it gets in your blood. If you pay attention and then you pick up on a couple of the rules, it gets in your blood, and then you're a hockey fan.
Well, how hard can hockey be? The Canadians invented it. Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
It's not that difficult a game. It's the blue line's the line of scrimmage. It never moves. It moves up and down in football. You figure that out. It never moves in hockey.
Yeah.
Puck has to go across that before you do. So it's the same as football. From that aspect of it, and it's really a pretty simple game in a lot of regards. The goal light goes on in the other end, you cheer. It goes on in your end, you boo. it's pretty basic for the most part. Keep your stick on the ice and go hard to the net. Hasn't really changed.
No, that's still the coach.
Except you can't hook a guy and do other things that used to be able to do to him. So. But, I was very fortunate. Chris McSorley was my coach in Toledo when we won a regular season championship and two playoff. The then Riley Cup after Jack Riley, who was the commissioner. It's now the Kelly Cup, which is Pat Kelly, who was the coach for the Peoria Prancers, one of the great hockey names that I played for in the IHL. But we won back-to-back championships in Toledo and 93 and 94, and Dave Elmore at the time had the Richmond Renegades. Dave being a baseball guy, and had got into hockey and ended up selling Richmond and was going to start a team in Tallahassee, Florida. And I used to sit next to Dave in the governor's meetings and got to be good friends with Dave. And it was, hey, what are you doing? Would you consider? Would you like to? And I said, well, where's Tallahassee at? And it's up in the panhandle. And, it was when the great expansion was going on down there. You had Lafayette, you had South Carolina. You had a lot of these, I won't say war memorial type buildings that were built that had funky seating or other things that were looking for additional revenue. And, they put an ice plant in. And like I used to tell people, we're selling beer and hitting people with sticks. And nobody gets arrested. I gave away a mobile home in Tallahassee at the end of the season, packed the crowd, we're, house on wheels. We did a lot of things that put people in seats and, was successful for a number of years and, eventually met its demise. And David had the Denver Grizzlies, in the IHL expansion. And then the Nordique came, the guy that had the Nuggets and whoever the Nuggets ownership program was bought the Nordique and moved them to Colorado and basically told Dave he didn't have a place to play anymore. And that's when Dave kind of came to me and said, hey, would you be interested in moving somewhere? Whether it was, we looked at San Diego, we looked at San Antonio, and eventually settled on Utah because of the Olympics. and the ability to manage the building and be the concessionaire and, you know, all that type of things. We played, you know, 2 years in the Delta Center while it was being built. And, you know, obviously you guys are familiar with the E Center. And I think that building was only like $25 million.
Really?
You know, which by today, yeah, I think it was like $25 million. Turner Construction was the contractor on it, and, you know, we kind of went through it. It's a perfect hockey building. The locker rooms are great. The facilities are great. Everything I wanted in the facility from a hockey aspect, I was able to get, you know, right to the locker room access through the benches and, you know, all that stuff. That it's you know, one of the all-time, I think, great hockey venues, regardless of whatever league it's in.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Yeah. And that's a lot of players come here because, you know, if you're being recruited and you're looking around at ECHL teams, we've had a lot of players tell us that, you know, the facility, one, that it was an Olympic building and, you know, there's a lot of history there, and two, it's just, it's a great facility for hockey.
Oh, no, we went into the Toledo Sports Arena, which was a building of about 4,800 people, and, you know, you couldn't tie your skates next to the guy in the locker room and the visitors because you'd bump your heads together. That was so small. So, I mean, the Toledo facility, Salt Lake facility there is unbelievable, second to none.
That's great. So as you come in, what did you heard about the previous ownership of the Salt Lake Golden Eagles? I wanted to know your opinion on that with Larry H. Miller, and because, you know, a lot of people call him an eagle killer or whatever. Do you think he gave it the best shot?
Well, I mean, I got to be good friends with Art Tease, and I loved Art, you know, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And really took care of Art, and Art, you know, never paid for a ticket, and, you know, I gave him anything he wanted whenever he wanted to come. And, you know, there was always the underlying stories that, well, Larry bought the Golden Eagles to tear down the Salt Palace because they couldn't build the Delta Center if the Eagles didn't have a home. And the minute the Eagles had a home and he built it, you know, he ran them out of town. You know, and, you know, I'm sure there's some, you know, some truth to that, because he ended up selling the piece of paper, and I don't know where at the end of the day the Salt Lake piece of paper went, but it went somewhere as an IHL team, and, you know, whether it was San Diego, I think it went to, perhaps, or something like that. But, you know, I mean, if they hadn't put ice in the Delta Center, we wouldn't have gone there and played for 2 years. I mean, we put, you know, I want to say we put like 18,000 in there against the Solar Bears for the final game.
No, I was there.
That
was amazing.
Gord Dineen ripped it off Alan Bester's chest, and Mark Rogers banged it home for the for the game winner. I mean, it was, you know, it was the place to be then.
Yeah,
but, I mean, you know, you kind of, you know, if Larry doesn't do that, there's no ice in the building, and we're not there, and, you know, I think, you know, it was basketball was a priority and hockey was a second deal. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense. We understood that from him.
I love going to the games, man. You throw the crowd out there for a while until they banned it. You know, it was great.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely a good time.
That stuff got crazy, too, with the fish, the rats in Florida. Yeah, that got
tough. We had... Like, I think it was our second year there after we had won. We had Grisby rappelling from the from the roof, and he fell down and dislocated his kneecap. They wanted to cut the parachute off, and I wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
You know, you got to wheel him to the back and get that thing off. We're going to put somebody else in that deal. I mean, this is next man up. We're not cutting the parachute out there in front of all these kids. Come on.
Show must go on.
Good call.
Yeah. He's not doing any of that stuff. Oh, no. I mean, it was certainly, you know, in building the Acord facility out there and having our locker room out there, then seeing the Steiner facilities. And, you know, you went from really having, you know, just Cottonwood to having, you know, all kinds of facilities now. So really the Olympics, you know, and having the Oval and all those things, the opportunity now, other than the sheer, you know, ice in Arizona is about $350 an hour for ice.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
But, you know, they're all private, you know, they're for-profit entities, you know, so there's nobody really, you know, underwriting the facilities. Where, you know, Utah now, you're still got municipal facilities. Hockey rinks typically will support operations but won't pay debt service. You know, so it's like, you know, they need to turn two or three times and file bankruptcy and then somebody else takes them over. Or they need to be municipally funded to where they can support themselves. They can pay utilities. They can pay a manager. They can do all those things. you know, as long as you've got figure skaters in the morning and you've got public skating on, you know, Saturday afternoon, and you've got hockey at 10 o'clock at night during the week,
yep.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, the amount of money you can make, you know, you've got probably 18 to 20 hours of rentable ice per day. You know, some of those are at peak time and some of those are from 1 to 2 when you have the figure skaters out there. So it's a situation that, you know, hockey's just an expensive game, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it just keeps getting more expensive.
Yeah.
But that's a tough part of it, Matt. But you bring up an interesting point. We complain all the time that we're at 180 to 200 an hour here.
Right.
And we feel like we're getting away with it. I can still get it for 175 an hour during the summer, and I'm like, oh, what a deal.
But, sure. Oh, no, absolutely.
What other kind of issues were you running into trying to expand the game here? Because you were known for doing some pretty creative things as far as growing the game here and getting fans in the seats. What do you think you did then that maybe they're not doing now?
Well, I think you've got to be part of the community. My son and daughter went to school in the neighborhood, and I was out there, and I talked to anybody that would listen to me, and, you know, I was on TV all the time. I was on the sports. I guessed this, I guessed that. You know, David Locke, the old broadcaster there, that he was anti-hockey, and I befriended him, and you know, the challenge is you've got to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk, and you've got to be a hockey guy and not just the coach and be a full-time resident. And, you know, I used to have the conversations with Dave Elmore all the time that, you know, Larry Miller's selling, you know, 10,000 cars a year to people, you know, and he's got the finance guy on his side. He's got the bank on his side. He's got the oil. He's got the guy selling toilet paper on his side buying season tickets. You know, we're just trying to sell hockey tickets. We have no ancillary business, which is the case in most places, that they own something else that allows them to own the local sports team that they funnel their, you know, visibility through. And we just really never had that, you know, like Larry had.
Wow, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, me either.
You know, I mean, that's the case with a lot of things, is they've got a, you know, a principal business that affords them the ability to do that, to expose everybody else to making sure they're buying tickets, they're buying a suite. It was like Zions Bank. You know, if you want us to run our financing through your bank, you know, you should have a suite. You know, you should have this, you should have that. I've got a picture of our championship win on the Delta Center ice. And one of the corners, they have, you know, the can signs, you know, over the portals you walk through. And there's a little Caesar sign over the portal right over the top of our heads, which is, being a little Caesar guy, is really ironic to look back at that and go, wow, you know, was there a sign or something going ahead for me being a pizza guy now?
So, yeah, that's right. So now, at what point do you decide that you're, what happens with you in Utah? You left Utah and ended up in Arizona.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of one of those that Dave really, you know, Dave Elmore and Donald told, really, I won't say lost interest, that may not be true, but once the Olympics came, you know, we'd won our championship, we had our rings, the Dallas Stars really didn't have any interest in us being a championship team, you know, and it was kind of one of those that, you know, I don't want to move again necessarily and go somewhere else. I had a chance to go to, you know, to Colorado and do some stuff over there. And I wanted to be a hockey guy more than I wanted to be a sales guy. And really, if you're not an ex-NHL player to be a general manager, if you're not an attorney to be a general manager, you know, being a sales guy, you know, and I was, you know, financially, Dave paid me well, and I was successful and all that. And I had worked for the Red Wings, owned the farm team in Toledo, where our NHL club, and I got to be good friends with Mr. Ilitch and Jimmy Devolano, and tried to get Little Caesars into the Olympic Arena, and ended up talking to the guy, and we were talking about Little Caesars, and this was pre-hot and ready, and my brother-in-law, my wife's sister, and her husband had just moved to Phoenix, and it was, you know, you got to look at the pizza deal, and it was kind of one of those, you know, do I want to continue with hockey? I'd been in it for, you know, half of my life by then as a player or as a front office guy, and you know, I explored the Little Caesar stuff, talked to Mr. Ilitch, and it was, hey, you can go do this and that. And, you know, that was 18 years ago, 2002. And my brother-in-law and I and our families, we had 11 stores. We're down to five now. We've sold the other ones off. I had a couple in Tucson, and you know what? The best thing about it, Jay, is it makes money while you're not there.
Yeah,
you know that's the perfect thing of it, and you know it's been a great opportunity for me.
That's I'll never forget. And I tried to have him in here. I tried to have Ben Wilner in here today to help with this interview. He comes on every once in a while.
Wilner!
We'll have him help with the podcast every once in a while. I'll never forget. You were back here. We were doing something, and Wilner was hitting you up for like, hey, do you have any like gift cards or certificates or anything for Little Caesar? And you're like, Ben, they're $5.
Right. Oh, no. There's nobody cheaper than Wilner. You know, well, cheaper than Ben. That would be the caveat in that deal there. So, no, it's been really good. You know, it's been really good. I have enjoyed it. It's afforded me an opportunity to be involved. And, you know, I coached my son through midget AAA and was able to do that and all those type of things. So, yeah, hockey's been, you know, I mean, and Little Caesars, you know, been very, very good to me. I have no complaints.
That's awesome. I want to give you a chance to, I don't know how you guys ended it with the Elmores, but my, I've made some posts on the Utah Puck Report's Facebook page, and we talked about, because, you know, I know for a fact that there are multiple NHL teams that have looked at Utah in the last 2 years, you know, to bring their program, their AHL program here. And I know there's been back and forth with the Elmores, and I never once said that the Elmores were dooming the process or any of that, but a lot of people are now blaming the Elmores for hockey dying here, even though they're the only reason we have a team here. So what would you say to those people, or what would you say, I know you're not a big post guy, but what would your reply be to that, that as long as the Elmores are here, hockey's not going to grow any further?
Well, I mean, Dave and Donna used to live there and had a house over in the Cottonwood area, and, you know, were emotionally involved with it and everything else. And, you know, things change. Dave has got to be, you know, 82 or 83 now, you know, and Donna's probably, you know, early 70s, mid-70s.
Yeah.
You know, I've been out of there 18 years. I mean, it's one of those that, you know, Dave's the concessionaire. Dave's the manager. I know, you know, umpteen years ago, he sold part of the franchise to the city of West Valley, or they took it in lieu of whatever the principal procedure was to ensure there would be a team. So if you bring an NHL team in there with their, you know, Vegas would obviously be the ideal tenant.
Yeah.
You know, they're in Chicago now, so it'd be easy to have a... But then what does Dave do with his piece of paper? Because he and I had that conversation here a few years ago, is where would you put it? And, you know, I did a little legwork for him, and there really weren't many locations that were open that made financial sense, you know, that you could do it. So, because, I mean, that the East Coast League piece of paper that's there now is the Tallahassee Tiger Sharks.
Right.
That was the making whoopee after the Tiger Sharks folded. And it was in hiatus for a year, then, you know, Dave moved it there. So, I mean, I think it's kind of one of those, unless somebody came in and made him a deal that he couldn't refuse with the city and, you know, everything else, you know, doesn't make any sense to, you know, and you have to have a wholly owned subsidiary, because we went through this with the Islanders. We went through this with Mike Milbury, and, well, you know, we're in the same business you are. We're here to sell tickets and make money for our owners and provide championship players for our fans. Well, Dallas didn't see it that way. You know, the Islanders didn't see it that way. And the American Hockey League at times, when I sat in the board meetings, didn't see it that way. Well, you're a developmental league.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not at the expense of sucking. You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it takes a toll on the fan base.
Well, it's imagine going to a dealership and, Jay, I need you to buy a car. Okay. Well, how many doors is it going to have? Well, at least two, maybe four. What color is it going to be? Well, it might be red, it might be blue. You know, I'm not sure, but I need you to buy it from me. Well, is it going to have good gas mileage? Well, you know, it'll get you around. That's what you're selling season tickets as a minor league hockey guy.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be here next year? Well, you know, we're going to have a bunch of guys with sticks and skates. Are you going to be any good? Well, you know, here's what, you know what I mean? It's, you know, it's really, you know, the East Coast League, I think, is easier because the guys aren't making any money. They're happy to go to the booster club. They're happy to go to the banquets. They're happy to go to the events where we had Todd Bertuzzi there making $1 million a year with the Islanders, couldn't get him out of his house. You know, he didn't want to be there. Yeah. You know, Tommy Salo didn't want to be there. They wanted to be back in the island, you know. I mean, Kip Miller didn't want to be there. You know, they were there as a means to an end. We're an East Coast Hockey League guy, you know. Two or three of them will get out, but most of them don't. They're there to marry the Budweiser distributor's daughter, you know. And, you know, I mean, that's why they're there. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's the I'm putting off reality for a while and, you know, playing hockey. You know, it's like the old slap shot, you know, Chrysler plant, here I come.
Yeah.
You know, nobody cheers for you there. So, you know, that's kind of the whole scenario. I think the East Coast League in a lot of ways is better. We really looked hard at the Western Canadian Junior Hockey League when the IHL was folding and the American League wanted us in, and it was $1 million franchise fee where you paid $100,000 for 10 years is what the American Hockey League deal was. And unfortunately, the Canadian Junior, they wanted like $2.5 million. Because you had Spokane, I mean, I think Utah would have been a great Canadian Junior League, because those guys, you're paying them nothing, and you're still selling, you know, premium price tickets, and you got guys that are going to play in the National Hockey League as junior players that would have had a little more sex appeal, but, you know, they really weren't sure. They wanted Boise and us to come, and Boise was having a tremendous amount of success in the West Coast League at that time, and, you know, it really just didn't quite pencil out timing-wise.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because that's come up with other people as well, that it almost happened back then. Rumors are it's about to happen again with Ogden possibly joining.
Well, I mean, a Canadian major junior franchise is like $5 or $6 million. Yeah. Canadian, you know, which is, you know, $1.50 U.S., but still a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah.
You know, it's still a significant amount of money. So, but no, I think, you know, the East Coast League and, you know, the Elmores and all that have done everything they can. And I know Kevin Bruder and Jared Youngman are doing a good job there, given, you know, you can't really play on Sundays. You can't really play on Mondays. I think, you know, what is Sunday and Monday are empty red seat night there. I mean, you know, it's just, yeah, you know, they're not coming to support you unless it's Friday and Saturday. And, you know, maybe you play Wednesday night. That was our biggest challenge, was seeing the same team two nights in a row. Does anybody care the second night unless you had the ambulance and the sheriff's there the first night?
Right. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because we just had that with the past two series the Grizzlies had at home. It got heated right away, and that lit up the internet, and then more people went. And then I went on Sunday, and nobody was there.
Right.
For the same, well, great hockey, great intense hockey.
Yeah, I don't think the church likes you playing on Sunday, though.
No.
I
mean,
We don't tell them.
Just, you know, I remember Larry Miller back in the day having to stand in the hallway when the Jazz were in the NBA playoffs because he couldn't go in the building, but yet he could be there if he wasn't there to watch the game type deal. So, yeah, I don't think Sunday's a very popular day there for at least entertainment and hockey-wise.
No, I agree. It's unfortunate because it's, for me, as a non-religious person, I got that whole day free.
Right.
I would love, and that's, oh, I thought it was awesome to go to a game. Yeah, it was perfect.
Right.
Besides my men's league.
You know, the Sunday afternoon hockey game is a great opportunity. You know, it works everywhere else in the country for the most part, except, you know, Salt Lake. So, but, yeah, I mean, you know, we were, you know, optimistic about Utah and, you know, building the building and having the rink and controlling the revenue streams. And I think for the most part, it's certainly been successful. You know, Utah wants you to win. You know, if you can't win, you know, they're going to find a reason not to come see you. I mean, it's probably that simple.
Yeah, we have Jordan Parisi on the show quite a bit, who was a goalie that he played a little bit in the NHL, and Zach Parisi is his younger brother. But
North Dakota guy.
Yeah, North Dakota guy, exactly. So I just remember he's been a close friend of mine for years.
His sister was better than he was, wasn't she? What?
Yeah, we don't bring that up with him. But I remember him calling me. He was so frustrated because he was told by management, like, he was working through some things, and he was really upset about wins and losses. And the management in the AHL told him, like, look, we're more worried about you in the process. Like, we want you to lose games. We want you to go through this process. We're more worried about that than wins and losses. You need to figure that out. And he's like, I can't wrap my mind around that. I have to win. Or I realize, or I'm not doing my job. It's they want you to develop in those minor leagues.
Well, they don't really care. You're an investment for them. And, you know, we were paying the Dallas Stars $50,000 a guy and got Gregor Baumgartner, you know. So, I mean, you know, you got Greg Hawkwood on one end, which was great, but then you got, you know, some of the other lesser guys. I remember when Smurf called me when I was living here in Phoenix, and he was coaching the Grizzlies in the Coast League, and they were playing the Roadrunners, and he said, "Hey, you know, my goalie got hurt. I need a guy to come sit on the bench, you know, and wrap a towel around," which I had no problem with. I mean, I'm pretty good in a slideshow. I went out to warm up, and the other guy says, "Well, I'm not warming up." I said, "What do you mean you're not warming up? You're the guy getting paid. I played two games in a row. I stood out there in warm-ups and, you know, didn't move and let guys zip them over my shoulder for 15 minutes and, you know, went and assumed my position on the bench and donated my check, which I don't know if I ever saw, to the Halloween party for the boys.
Yeah, so, if it was Smurf, you didn't see the check.
Yeah, him and Greg Spenrath, I think, was the assistant at that time. So.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, hockey's come, you know, I won't say full circle in Utah, but, you know, certainly you've got a diehard, you know, 1,500, you know, every night, snowstorm or not, that are coming. But you need, you know, an extra, you got to put five in that building on an average, I would assume, to not necessarily to break, you know, make money, but probably to break even. I mean, I, you know, based on travel and, you know, a hockey stick's $200 now. A pair of hockey skates are $800.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, financially, it's a struggle.
What would you do right now to put seats, to fill those seats? Do you have any suggestions?
You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure even what Dave's charging for ticket prices, but it's almost got to be the Little Caesars mantra that, you know, do you want to sell, you know, 10,000 tickets at a dollar or 1,000 tickets at $10? You know, if you're the concessionaire and you're getting parking, you want to sell 10,000 tickets at a dollar and create a scenario that has, you know, entertainment, it has noise, it has the place to be, it's, you know, whatever. But if the ticket doesn't have a value, are you going to come? You know, I don't know where that line, you know, the line of demarcation crosses that. Is it a $5 ticket and you can put, you know, 10,000 people in there every night at a $5 ticket? Or are you better off just selling a $10 ticket and getting your 1,000 people, you know? Where that line, I mean, we were getting, you know, I want to say $35 a ticket on the glass and $25 for the third row and, you know, $15 or $20 between the blue lines back in the American League and IHL days that, you know, we were able to get that. And that was, you know, we had ex-NHL guys, current NHL guys coming back and forth. But we did some, focus groups and some other things back in the day. But, you know, I would say if you'd want to go out with your season ticket program and, you know, really almost have it as a voucher that's good for any game, for any seat, and, you know, you can take 20 people to one game or go to 20 different games. You know, my fear was I'd walk into a guy's office and he'd open his drawer and he'd pull out a pack of season tickets and fan them out and go, I couldn't give them away. You know, and that's where we always, you know, that every ticket never lost its value, that you could redeem a ticket for any future game of a similar ticket. I assume they're still doing that, you know. I'm not sure.
I assume
the ticket always has a value. And, you know, it was one of those, I always had a thing at the box office. If somebody shows up at the box office and says, Tim Mauser left me a seat, give him a ticket, because I probably did. I just didn't think about it.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I don't need somebody coming, you know, whether I met him at the grocery store or met him, you know, up on the ski lift or something. It's, you know, you need to get people to the venue. They need to be entertained. And, you know, as you guys are hockey players, you know, it's hard to convince people that you don't have to be an expert to understand. I mean, look at all the politicians out there. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're still politicians. You can go be a hockey fan and not know the game.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, and a lot of people, you know, they're pinching pennies and stuff like that. You know, some people are real cheap and stuff. You got to pay for parking now at the Maverick Center. You know, it used to be free. You just go to the game, go in.
Wilner sent me a picture of the Tim Mauser parking spots finally faded away. It was like a bad dream. They kept paving over and it kept coming back up through the asphalt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it did forever.
A good ghost story.
Yeah.
A good ghost story, but. You know, they just have to create opportunity, and winning solves that. You know, I mean, I know they've got, you know, dollar hot dogs and dollar beers and those things that we never did back in the day. We never did bring back the
Bikini Salt Night.
Lake Eagles Bikini Time. We never. That was the one thing I just wouldn't do. I just wouldn't do it because it's one of those. It may get you one game, but at the end of the day, the family and whatever and all that stuff, you just couldn't trust, you know, that you were going to get the best of participants, let me say.
Yeah. Well, I was a part of that a lot with, as I worked with the other radio station that I worked with back in the day that had lower integrity standards.
Yes, that's perfect.
And we were big on that night, and that's, yeah, we were, right. Yeah. It was, it is one of those questions, and it actually still comes up a lot when you talk to people about it, because they knew that night right. sold out, but how many fans did you turn away that night because they don't want to be a part of that stuff?
Yeah,
that's
oh,
one
no.
of those, you know, line of demarcations that you were talking about. There's the dichotomy there. Do you sell out that night and turn real fans away or turn a real family away?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think Utah's the market that really wants to focus on that. That was always kind of the, you know, it was the fighting and those type of things. And, you know, that it's part of the game and it's going to be part of the game. It's not really part of the game in the NHL because you have to be able to skate now. But yet, you know, at the end of the day, it still sells tickets. You know, it's part of the deal. It's definitely part of the deal.
Yeah.
So,
it's like now, you know, Star Wars night is like the biggest night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Star Wars night's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, which I would never have guessed that 20 years ago, but yet, you know, I mean, it's they've reinvented themselves. They've gone back to the start before there was even a movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Tim, I've always wanted to have you on the show and talk. I knew you'd have a lot of insight that the rest of us just don't have. Like, I've been a part of, thanks to you and calling me up as an e-bug, you were the first one that gave me my opportunity there.
Well, you're the only guy that had gear, Jay.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, a lot of guys, there's, you know, don't confuse yourself, Jay. There's a lot of guys that own equipment that aren't goalies.
Yeah.
You know? Well, just because you own goalie equipment doesn't make you a goalie.
That's true.
You know, it makes you a guy who owns goalie equipment.
And I'm available.
That'd be me, too.
Those were the two things. Yep. I had equipment, and I was available.
Yep. That's a big part of it. That's a big part of it, you know?
And
you
told me that, you know, one of the days I e-bugged when we were in the AHL, and I was walking out, and you're like, what are you doing? Well, there's the Tippegriz or whatever. You're supposed to be upstairs. I'm like, I'm not really on the team. And he's like, you told me. I can't remember exactly what you said. But like, nobody else knows that. You got to go sell the image. You got to sell the dream. And I'm like, you want me to go upstairs
absolutely.
And wait tables as an e-bug? Like, get up there.
Sure. Hey, you know, I mean, you're going to make some kid's day. He doesn't know. I mean, you scribble your name on a puck. He's not going to be sure who it is in 10 years. All he knows is he's got a puck with a Grizzly autograph for him. So,
that's right.
You know, that's the beauty of it.
It's been fun, man. And like I said, you gave me the opportunity. And 20 years later, I'm still doing it. And I'm still trying to learn. And I try to steal information and drills and, you know, just knowledge from all the coaches that have been through here and from the general managers. I mean, I've learned a ton from your lessons, and I hope that this podcast today is, I mean, you've given a lot of insight, so that's, like, we grow.
It's a great market, you know, and I went back there. I'd probably been gone 5 or 6 years, and I went back for a game. My son played somewhere up there, and we were walking through the building, and 2 or 3 people stopped me for my autograph, and he looked at me and go, why do they want your autograph? Well, you know, you got a good point with that, but, you know, I mean, that I mean, I used to go to the, you know, stand up there like the Walmart greeter. I had a pocket full of lapel pins. So I put a lapel pin on, a Grizzly lapel pin. I'd shake a guy's hand. I'd give him my lapel pin. He'd go, oh, great. I'd reach in my pocket and put another. I never gave him the one out of my pocket. I gave the one off my lapel, you know, because it meant more to him that it was mine than it was just one, you know, in my pocket. And I always had a lot of people tell me that. I'd go around and stick 6 or 7 pucks in my pocket before the game and, you know, hand them out to kids. You know, hey, here's a puck, you know, game notes, those type of things that, you know, the same people you meet on the way up are the same ones you meet on the way down. And, you know, you got to kind of be the Walmart greeter and be everything to everybody because you're the only experience they're going to have. You're the first line of who they are. And I never sat in a suite. I sat down, you know, at ice level by the goal. And if you wanted to at me, you could find me. And, you know, I never really hid from anybody and was around. And, you know, I think that went a long way with my relationship with the fans and, you know, we were good and we won, and Butch was great, and Bob Boren was great, and, you know, even Don Hay was great for the most part once, you know, I got him going. So I have nothing but fond memories of Utah.
That's awesome. And Don Hay is now a part of the Portland Winterhawks and is coaching a Utah kid right now. And it's
nice.
Yeah, it's funny to hear stories. Mason Manick is playing there, and I hear Mason talk about, you know, getting off the ice with Don. And I remember those days. I remember Don coming to me and saying, "Hey, can you get some fire hose? Because I need." He puts fire hose on the ice and makes you skate laps around it. And he had you had so many legends here that are still, you know, you throw those names around, Butch Goring and.
Hold on.
Just,
I mean, I saw Richard "Shaky" Krause. I drove down to Tucson to see him when they were in town, the Iowa Wild. And my son coaches wide receivers now at Iowa State. He's a football guy, and Shaky's coaching the Iowa Wild. So I got to see him again a month ago when I was in town for a football game. So, you know, there's a lot of people still kicking around out there. I see Butch Goring every time the Islanders come in. He gets me a press pass, and I go out there. And Dean Chenault with Carolina now. So, I mean, there's still a lot of guys that have come through that are still involved with hockey. So it's, I think, you know, everybody liked Utah. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that didn't like Utah.
Yeah, well, it's we talk about it all the time, is that players come here and either they love it here and they marry our women and they stay and then they become coaches, or, you know, they tell other people, like, undercover, like, Utah is an amazing place to play.
Rod Miller's still kicking around there, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure I saw him on Sunday, but yeah, he is. I think I saw him at the game. I was gonna go down and talk to him, but yeah, Rod Miller's still here, and yeah, like you said, and we've got the legends of you guys like you and Shaky still.
There you go.
That's the difference, though, between hockey and basketball. You know, the basketball guys.
Hey, I had John Stockton driving the Zamboni during the lockout.
We tried to appeal
to everybody. He'd show up halfway through the first period and leave halfway through the third after he drove the Zamboni. He loved it. He was crazy.
My friend, my best friend at the time was, he was a sales guy there and trying to win a ring after, of course, they already won the ring.
Oh, yeah.
But we went out and practiced one night, and John Stockton and his family were out there skating around.
Oh, no, he hit his wife one night skating and cut her for like 20 stitches over the eye, you know. Didn't stop playing.
Yeah.
He was crazy.
Love
he
it.
He loved it, though.
I love that, and people around here need to know that.
It's, yeah, for sure.
Those are cool stories. All right, Tim.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, and Tim, if you want to hear more stuff, all you got to do is go to kslsports.com and look for podcasts, or you can text the word puck to 57500, and then you'd be subscribed to this show.
I will do that, and keep Wilner in line. You know, he needs somebody to watch after him.
I've been trying for 20 years. I don't know. He's crazy. He's a men's league legend.
All right, thank you.
Without a doubt.
All right,
Tim. Guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And that's the Utah Puck Report.